So, word of honor and the pearl of great price. You know, there was a there's a story I tell in the book about asking a question of a fairy tradition elder. And every time I've asked this person a question, every time in the, I don't know, 15 years I've known her, it usually takes a lot for me to bring a question to her. And so my questions are weighty. Her response has always been, her initial response has always been, let me think about that and get back to you. Okay? So rather than sort of opening her mouth and answering, right, saying something, right, what she does is she goes away and she sits with the question and she waits for the answer and she waits for the right words to express the answer. And when she eventually responds, she's always succinct and clear and clean. And this is a witch that I would say is a person of honor, right? She doesn't say a lot, but each pearl that spills from her lips is well worth waiting for, right? And that's the kind of witch that I hope that we all want to grow into, right? Or try to be, you know, do our best to try to be, right? There's a story called Thomas the Rhymer, and there's a way in which, you know, it's just a story, just a fairy tale, and there's a way in which it is a telling of sort of the initiatory path of, in this case, the bard, right? And Thomas goes on a rather distinguished and rare journey to the land of faerie. And while he's there, he's not allowed to speak. When he comes back, though, he can only tell the truth. Okay? And he's really upset about this because he followed the rules while he was in faerie and he didn't speak while he was there. But he comes out the other side, and he's told, "This here is my gift to you from the fairy queen, and it is that you cannot lie. Your tongue will not allow you to lie." And he's really mad. You know, he says, "Well, that means I can't bargain. I can't barter. I can't flirt with a woman. I can't, you know, like, my world is filled with little kinds of lies, right?" But here's the thing, Thomas did okay because for 7 years he was silent. And really, the story is about, you know, Thomas, and it's this fairy tale, ha ha ha. But it's also about the magic of holding silence. And that when you hold silence with purpose and intention and integrity to learn from it, right? If you can't speak for 7 years, right, what can you do? You can observe. You can watch. You can learn. You can listen, right? You can be open. You can come to wisdom. And so did the fairy queen bequeath him with the tongue that cannot lie, or was it the natural result of his silence? So what happens when we begin to practice silence and to take responsibility for our words is that it becomes more and more difficult to be dishonest, right? Even even the little white lies that make life more comfortable for everyone, right? Like saying, I'm good, when someone asks how you are, when you're far from good, right? Or to say, let me see if I can make it, you know, or sure, I'm coming to your party, and then at the last minute you call and you say, actually, I'm not good, I feel sick, whatever. What happens when we engage silence and we come to really know ourselves and the power of our words is that, again, we are more likely to say, if you're invited to that party that you know makes you uncomfortable the minute you hear about it, you might say, let me get back to you on that, right? That's not a lie. That's a, like, let me think about that, right? And then maybe tell the person the truth, you know, like, I'm really uncomfortable in situations where I don't know everyone, or I'm much more comfortable in scenarios where there's three or four intimate, you know, people having an intimate conversation than I'm at a place where there's 100 people doing small talk, right? The truth doesn't have to hurt, right? If we learn how to wield it properly, right? If we understand that our intention and our impact are profound. Okay. Imagine if you had utter and complete sureness that the words that you speak and the words that are spoken to you are true. Just imagine that for a minute. That people only tell you the truth. That you only speak the truth. Can you sense the amount of power and life force which might become available to you if you no longer had to expend it in courteous falsehoods? Can you imagine the life force and power that might be available to you if you knew that what was being said to you was true and you didn't have to try to discern what the subtext really is? That's a lot of power. That's a lot of life force, right? Think about how much life force we have collectively put toward in the last year and a half, trying to discern what is true and isn't true coming out of our government. And think about the amount of life force, the amount of power and attention that have been given that simple task. What is true and when am I being lied to? Right? And apply that to our personal lives. So there's a double-edged sword here with this tongue that cannot lie, aside from the, you know, I can't lie to get laid and I can't lie to bargain, right? you know, I've seen people take this idea, this statement that I have the tongue that cannot lie or my words are honorable. And I've seen people sort of use it carte blanche to be brutally honest with everyone about everything, okay? Our honesty should be kind, okay? We shouldn't use it as a weapon against others, right? The sword of truth is not meant to be used to slice other people to ribbons. Okay. So as witches, you know, oftentimes we know a lot about people that they haven't told us outright, right? You know, I can sit in, my kids used to get mad at me because we'd go and sit in a restaurant somewhere and I'd be just I sort of fall into a trance, staring at, the couple across the way from me. And my eldest would say, "Mom, stop staring at those people." And I'd sort of come back to myself, and I knew everything about them, I knew if she had cancer. I knew he was cheating. I knew she knew he was cheating, Now, is it my responsibility, because I know that, to walk up to that table and say those things? It's not, right? So we know things. We see things. And unless we're asked directly, it's probably safe to assume that the other person isn't interested in learning what we know, right? Unless they ask us for a reading, unless they ask us for advice, unless they ask us what we know. Oftentimes, it is better to slip back into your silence about what you know. It's not our job to hurt people with our words or our wisdom, right? Victor Anderson used to say, if you're confused about power, and knowing what's going on in other people's lives without them telling you is power, right? So if you're confused about power, he said, remember love. If you're ever confused about power, remember love and act from there. Speak from there, right? So we have about 20 minutes left before closing time, and I want to just open the floor again. Questions, comments about this last little bit, or any? It's a lot to take in. I've gotten so that I'm not surprised when there's just silence, because I'm not taking it as an insult. I'm taking it as people's heads are swimming. So before we close, I'm gonna. So before we close, couple things. I want to say, again, thank you for spending the whole day with me doing this important work. I want you to understand that this is a journey, and that it's a journey that lasts a lifetime, right? Like, there's very little on the mystical path that we ever get to say, oh, yeah, I know that. I'm done with that. I finished that. I completed it. Initiation doesn't mean we completed anything. It actually means beginning, right? Now I get to start again, right? So these processes that we talked about today, the processes of coming to know ourselves, a slowing down, of coming into our center, of asking ourselves the really hard questions, the allowing of that litany of doom to bubble up and vomit up its garbage so that we can just finally clean it up, get it out of the way, and move on, right? So that we can hear the song of creation that moves through us underneath that litany, right? This is a process. It's a journey. Coming into a sense of being embodied is a journey, right? And it starts with these little tiny commitments of, like, I'm going to listen to my environment for 5 minutes. I'm going to tune into my body and find out what it's trying to tell me right now, right? The body is always giving us signals. Be afraid. Be excited. You have to pee. You're hungry, right? The body is always telling us stuff, and sometimes we don't even listen. When I worked as a nurse years ago, I'd go all day, and I'd get home from work, and I'd be like, oh, my God, I didn't even pee all day because I was so busy. and so out of touch with my own body, right? So what is the body telling us? What is our wild nature bringing in for information for us to partake of? These are processes, and they're called practices because we just keep practicing them. We keep asking the questions. We keep going on, right? So if anything struck you today like, oh my God, I'm never going to get there, or I'll never figure this out, or I'll never be done with this. No, you won't. I'm not, right? I just wrote about what I know so far. And I didn't write a lot in conclusion, right? Because it's a process. So I really want you to hear that in case anything today sort of stuck in your craw, like I'm not getting it, or I'm not good at that, or this is hard. It's going to be hard. Of course it is. And anything Victor Anderson said, you know, anything worthwhile is dangerous, right? So we step outside our comfort zones, and we know it's going to be hard, and we know it's going to be long, and we know that we don't really get the an opportunity to be like, I'm all done with that silence thing, right? To know, to will, to dare, and to hold silence are part of an ongoing cycle that is happening whether we are conscious of it or not. And I just, you know, again, writing about the silence piece of it, I wanted to bring it more into people's consciousness, the necessity for silence, the necessity to turn inward and access our own wisdom and our own divine nature, our own intellect, and our own wildness. So as we close, we opened with a invocation to the dark mothers. And I just want to thank them. Let me find that opening invocation again. Of course, I took all of my stickers out of the pages as I went by. Here it is. So Hecate and Caradwyn, dark mother who entered in Shekinah Kalima, dark mother who entered in, you without beginning or end, our dark mother who entered in, dweller between tomb and womb, the dark mother who entered in, thank you for blessing and being with us in this work, for keeping pure the intentions of our heart. And to close, we are darkness, death's hands discerning. We are stillness, cold, fire unburning. We are promise, the sun child returning. And we are mirrors in the world ever turning. Knowledge is distilled and arises as wisdom from the deep well of silence. The wise speak little. What words they say, gather together and string them like pearls, and wear these close to the heart, like a compass. Let them direct your steps along the path. If you would be wise, hold your tongue. That's what I have for you, lovelies, this afternoon. I will send you all an email tomorrow with these recordings on them. And hopefully the three recordings all work. Thanks for giving me an opportunity to do this and for giving me an opportunity to open my book and look at it after a year and a half. I appreciate that a lot. That's all, folks.